Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So hello and welcome to Everything is Fine, a podcast for women over 40, live from here.
Woohoo!
Ow! Hi. We are your hosts. I'm Jen Romolini.
And I'm Kim France. And our thank you. Our guest today is Karen Walron. Karen is an author, lawyer, leadership coach, and longtime activist. Her latest awesome book is Radiant Rebellion, Reclaiming Aging, Practice Joy, and Raise a Little Hell.
Damn straight.
So, show of hands. How many people in this room feel their ambition has changed since they've gotten older?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So this is a topic that comes up. We really do a weekly podcast for women over 40, and this is a topic that comes up all the time. The idea of waning ambition, women who feel they've lost their ambition. And what we found over almost, what are we at, 200 episodes almost?
Almost.
What we found over 200 episodes of talking to women in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond is that this is not really true. We haven't lost our ambition. Our ambition has just changed, and we're not sure how to redefine it, right? So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the midlife ambition crisis and the often positive transformation that happens as we're over 40, and the three of us are all acutely familiar with this. I just wrote a book called Ambition Monster.
It's about so good, y'all. I got an advanced copy. It's so good.
It comes out in June. It's a little early, but you can pre-order it now. Hint, hint. There are bookmarks to this effect, which I will give out. But but we really are trying to talk about, like, where has our ambition been and where is it going? And how do we sort of get excited about our careers again, maybe if we're in a place of burnout? How do we find the next thing that we really want to do? What's the thing that's going to ride us out into, you know, the end of our lives? And how do we stay engaged with work, stay relevant, all of it? So let's start with this. And two of you have both made big pivots in your life. Let's talk about, like, where was your ambition at the height of your career, sort of versus
Well, I was always, I mean, in my 20s and 30s, I was exceedingly ambitious. And in that way that I think people say, oh, she's very ambitious, and don't mean it entirely as a compliment.
She's a careerist.
Yeah. I ended up having kind of a big career. I founded Lucky Magazine and ran that for 10 years.
Remember Lucky Magazine, y'all? Right? Yeah.
She was also at Sassy. In case there's Sassy people
remember
in the house.
Remember Sassy?
I remember.
I do too. But so after I was fired from Lucky, that was a job that I think where my ambition really almost killed me. I was suffering physically. I was suffering emotionally. I was terrified to leave the job. And so I stayed until they kicked me out. And as soon as that happened, I felt like my ambition was, I was relieved. I was half relieved and half heartbroken, but I knew it was the right thing. And I knew I needed to not do anything like it ever again. So I took some time off, and then I started a blog in 2012, which is now Substack, Girls of a Certain Age. And the podcast came along several years later. And I'm able to work for myself now. There are a lot of things about it that are not ideal as far as ambition goes. You know, one of the things I've talked about is that I think ambition grows when you're in competition with or around other people. Mm. And so that's been my challenge, is figuring out how to remain ambitious in, you know, my tiny apartment.
So similarly, I had a big career in my 20s and 30s. I have an engineering degree and did engineering for a little while and decided I did not want to be an engineer, so I went back to law school. And I was a lawyer for a long time, and I had a really great career. And I was a success by all definitions. I ended up, some of you may have heard about a company called Halliburton. I was the general counsel for a subsidiary of Halliburton, and then I became the chief of staff for the CEO of Halliburton during the time that it was all in the news, by the way. And then eventually, for me, I think the big change happened when I became a mother. I achieved all of this success in my 30s, which is great. And then I became a mom and was like, I don't mind working these hours, but I'd rather work for these hours because for me as opposed to someone else. And that was really sort of so I left on my own. I left, you know, I was like, thanks for all the fish, but I'm gone. And it was still hard because I'm an immigrant. I'm from the Caribbean. I'm a black woman. And I had a lot of my identity tied up in the fact that I was this badass lawyer, engineer, chief of staff person, right? And there was something, and I would not have ever called myself an egotistical person, but there's something about going to a party and people go, what do you do? Well, hi, I'm attorney at law, right? Yeah. Like there's something about that I realized I had sort of like tied my identity up in. And now I'm an author. I've written a few books. The most recent one is called Radiant Rebellion, Reclaim Aging, Practice Join, Raise a Little Hell, which is about aging. And I would say that, like you were alluding to, that I probably am as ambitious as I was in my 20s and 30s, but it wasn't necessarily an outwardly defined ambition. It wasn't about the image necessarily, right? Like of the stiletto heels and sort of the badass and walking around as the only black woman and having power, right? Like there was a lot of that. For me, it comes a lot with finding meaning and purpose, but also helping other people find meaning and purpose and helping other people realize how much power we, especially we women, have in creating and curating lives that are meaningful and purposeful. And I don't think I figured that out until I was well into midlife. And I wish I figured it out when I was younger. So
I mean, but we can't figure things out until we, like, it just, yeah. It has to take our time when we get there. So similarly, and I'll go pretty fast, but I was, I'm a blue collar kid, teenage parents, didn't have a lot of money. And I think that I rose really pretty fast in my career. I was a chief content officer of Shondaland. I was an executive in tech companies, and I was so lonely and I was so unhappy and I was so burnout. And the responsibility of, you know, being this manager for 35 employees and, you know, the fires that you're putting out all day, I was so exhausted and I couldn't imagine leaving. I needed it. It was so tied up with my identity, and it was so validating to be like at that point that I would have never left on my own. I similarly was fired and kicked out. And when I was kicked out, it was so messed up to me because it was like someone had died. Like, I felt like my career had died and I thought it was over. And I was like, oh my God, I'm 46 years old. No one's going to fucking hire me. Like, and I also know tick, 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 tick. People tell you nobody's going to hire you after 50. You can't do anything. So I took some time away from my career and figured out what I wanted to do. And I had a real sense of like, I'm going to get it right this time. I'm going to figure out what nurtures me. I'm going to redefine what I want to do and what fits for who I am now, not the idea of what people think of me. So I wound up taking an internship at almost 50 years old in podcasting at a podcast studio. And I learned how to podcast. And last year I put out a very, you know, it was fairly successful documentary podcast with Crooked Media. I do the podcast with Kim. I write books now. I made it work for myself. And I think one of the things we want to talk about today is sort of the lessons, because there was a lot of fear in each of those steps. And there was a lot of pressure from the outside world to not step off the career ladder, to not get off the train, you know. And there's people who will tell you, you know, you're crazy. What are you going to take that job? You know, you're going to make less money than you made before. You're going to do this. And finding that sort of inner compass that teaches you what you want in later in life, and also not believing these like overarching rules that everybody's telling us that we don't matter anymore, that we can't get work, that we can't start something new, because none of it is true. It's absolute bullshit. Mm-hmm. So,
and I think the other thing is, one of the things we become ambitious for later, or some of the things we become ambitious for later in life, aren't career things. They're really about how we live and the people we see and feeding our souls. Mm-hmm. Which I think counts as ambition. Yeah.
So I think that for all of you, for the two of you, I'd want to know, like, after having that kind of, is that all there is, like the career peak stall, how did both of you find professional fulfillment again? Like, how did you sort of figure out what it was that you wanted?
Well, for me, I had grown up, my dad has a PhD in engineering, and I went to engineering school pretty much because he said I was going to engineering school. And I had been, I had spent so much of my youth and my early career doing what I was supposed to do. And so when I quit, I was like, I'm going to see what I like to do, right?
Yeah.
And so for me, the real entree into it was writing and photography. And so I started a blog, called Chookalunks, that's actually still going 20 years later, and it's now a Substack as well. But it's still on the site, and I started writing, and it was very much a well, I will tell you, I am the person that I don't like to tell people when I'm about to do something, mostly because I just don't want to hear the what, right? So literally, like, that's how I went to law school. I told people once I had accepted. Like, I did not tell anybody that I was taking the LSAT or considering law school. And so that's what I did. I was like, okay, I'm going to quit. And people asked, well, what are you going to do? And I'm going to be like, I'm going to rest for a while. But really, I was, well, I have this blog that I've been doing. I'm going to kind of focus on that. And I took up photography and taught myself how to shoot and use the blog as a way to kind of have a photography practice, and just decided I was going to be open to what came to me. Speaking things came to opportunities. I love public speaking. So, and I literally just sort of played for me in doing what I loved and sort of doubling down if I really loved it. And that literally for the last half of my life, I would say, or last maybe third of my life, that's how I've done everything. Yeah. Just about. Yeah.
When I was fired, I was pretty demoralized and very burnt out. And it would be disingenuous to not say that I had some financial stability at that point. I'd been in a lucrative job. I'd been very disciplined about spending money, and I got a decent severance. So that gave me a little bit of bandwidth, I guess, runway to see what I wanted to do. And for a while, what I wanted to do was absolutely nothing. It was like, I could not think of where my place in the publishing world was, because the publishing world barely existed at that point. It was circling the drain. I very much felt like, you know, a silversmith, or like a career that doesn't exist anymore. And so I took some time. I had just bought a new apartment that I could no longer afford to stay in. So I stayed there for a while, and I picked my nephews up at school, and I just kind of paid attention to the world until things started percolating. And I started thinking, well, I want to write a little something about this, you know, or something about that. And so then I started my blog, and I did it at first privately and just shared it with a few friends. Blogging was really a very different kind of writing than I was used to, and I wasn't especially good at it. And then after a while, I got it designed and launched it. And it took a while to make money from that, you know, but eventually I was able to do that. And so that's that.
What are some misconceptions you think women have around aging and ambition?
How long we got?
I think this is a real one, right? Because I hear people talk really negatively about it. I hear people say, you know, often, which is the kiss of death, and please nobody do this. I hear people say in meetings, like, oh, I'm so old.
Oh, God.
I'm please. So old. Just don't, don't do that.
Like, vow we're never going to say yes. that when we leave this room today, please. Mm-hmm.
Don't say it in front of young people. Just don't say it.
Unless you say it with an exclamation point.
I'm so old.
For sure.
But yes, yeah, so misconceptions.
Well, I mean, so I will tell you, when I started writing my book, I literally wrote the book because what I heard was, let me just start. I wrote the book when the year I was turning 55, my daughter turned 18, my marriage turned 20, and my daughter was graduating and going off to college, right? And the only thing people seemed happy about was the 20-year marriage. Right? Everybody was like, 55, double nickels, how you feeling about that? Or, oh, your baby's leaving. Oh, you know, like everybody was like, it's time to start shrinking. And I looked around at my friends and they were like launching podcasts and writing best-selling books and producing Broadway plays and just starting to do this stuff. And we were all around the same age, and I'm like, what is that about? Like, what is it? What is that sort of story that, okay, women are supposed to get smaller and everything else, or, you know, and then the reality is that that wasn't happening. And what I found was that it's designed to be that way. Like, it's capitalist patriarchy. Like, it always is. Literally, because, as they say, when they can prove to you that you need to anti-age, they've got a customer for life. Like, it's literally baked in to society for us to fear aging and fear getting older, because then we'll spend trillions, literally trillions of dollars trying to fight it. And once you know that, it's sort of like Neo taking the blue pill. Like, you can't unsee it anymore, right? Like, you're like, oh, wait a minute, right? So I think, like, all of it about, oh, well, your beauty is going to fade. Like, what the, who made that up, right? Like, or what, like, all of the things, everything that you've ever heard about aging that is negative is designed to make you feel like you've got to behave a certain way, do a certain way, and spend lots of money, right? Because God, don't let people know that you're doing that. So, I was liberated writing this book, as you can tell, but that was definitely.
Yeah, there's a thing of, like, that I've always had that you have to really keep up in old age, which is not old age, but like age, which is like, fuck off, that's not going to apply to me. Like, fuck you, that's not going to apply to me. I don't care. And I always am like, okay, you won't let me through the front door, I'm going to find a side door in. And I think that as we get older, there can be a thing where we feel like we know everything, we've done jobs, we've been around, whatever. We lose that scrappiness and we lose that persistence, because the persistence works as it has always worked. You find something you really want, you're really interested in, you get a clue down the path, you're like, okay, also you take an inventory of what you have and figure out what you don't, and you just keep going down the path. The system works the same that it's always worked, you know? It's just we lose steam and we think, well, oh my God, if I do this now, I'm going to be 57. But you're going to be 57 anyway. You know what I mean? You're not going to turn 57. So, and the other thing is, I'll say, is there are so many of us. Like, what feels often, you know, if you look at social media or if you go in the wrong spaces on the internet, which is really easy to do, or you go to TikTok, God, and it's like, everyone's young, I don't matter. But it's not true. Not true.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things that made, I mean, I've sort of made a career out of being my age at this point.
Yes.
And and part of why I did that was I thought, like, okay, I just turned 60. Like,
yeah.
But like, if I exist, there have got to be a lot of other women out there who exist like this, who aren't being spoken to at all, or who are being
spoken to condescendingly.
Condescendingly, overly earnestly. Like, where is the, you know, I still felt like I had a lot of irreverence, you know, and I didn't see age being treated that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's made a big difference for me.
Well, go ahead.
One of the things that I think, and I know, because I've never been somebody who's really worried about getting older. And one of the things that I, when I turned 40, was, if you think about it, like, what's the average age for women in America, right? Like 80, 78, 80, right? So when you hit 40, you have your life again to live. Except this time you don't have to go to school. You don't have to learn how to talk. You don't have to learn how to walk. Like, you don't have to do, like, you've got all that done and you have your life again, right? At that, just by average. So the idea, you know, I mean, like, don't even start me when I, like, my daughter just turned 20 and she's like, oh my God. I was like, you have got to be kidding. Right?
That's the best.
You know, like, please. But also, do you know what the target age is for anti-aging cosmetics? 24. Right? Like 24, they're starting to do this. So it's actually not that surprising that she would feel that way, right? But like, she was like, oh my God, I'm not a teenager anymore. And I'm like, kid, like you have, and so, and if she does that, of course, 29-year-olds are going to do it, 39-year-olds, 49. And the way I think of it is, like, to my daughter, of course, I look ancient, right, at 56. But to my mom, who's in her mid-80s, I look like I'm just getting started, right? It is such a spectrum. And so, why decide what age is like, okay, I'm finished up? Like, there is always somebody who is going to be older than you looking at you going, what is wrong with you? Right?
Right.
Like, so just don't buy into it.
No, sure. Age is never a good, it's never good to think like, I'm too old for that.
Oh.
I can't do that. I mean, sometimes we are too old for it, but it's.
Right. I'm not going to go run some hurdles right now. I
yeah.
mean, you know, I could, but it wouldn't be great later, you know, but. Right, exactly. Just stretch, you'll be fine. But there is, there are these just real misconceptions, and especially I know there are a lot of creators in this audience, mm-hmm. and there really is an idea that, like, you know, like we've been saying, like, oh my God, it's over, the audience is small, you're not young, no, blah, blah, blah. And we made our podcast specifically for women over 40, and we've had, like, really good success without putting that much effort into it, honestly. But we've had really good success, like a very devoted audience, because our audience, we know who they are, and they know who we are. And I really think as creators, like, being able to target, like, who exactly you're speaking to and then speak to them authentically about the things that are relevant to their lives. It's one of the smartest things I've ever done. Is I've been making content for women for fucking, I don't know, 30 years at this point. And it's always, if you're for everybody, you're for nobody. It's always fine. Just, you know them. And if they are you, even better.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, like we talk every week on the podcast, you know, about menopause, and we talk about it in ways that are not like, you know, musty granny panties. Like we want to change the way we're perceived, because we shouldn't be perceived like this. I don't feel not vital.
Yeah.
And the thing I think it's also really important to us to relate to everyone is, like, something always comes next. Mm-hmm. Something just always comes next. And menopause, perimenopause, it doesn't feel like something's coming next.
Yeah. It feels like an ending when you don't realize how many beginnings there are.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you just triggered for me, Jen, when I was writing the book, I interviewed a woman named Ashton Applewhite, which you should look up her podcast. She's amazing. She's an anti-ageism activist. And I was talking to her, and I will tell you, I interviewed her for the book, and I was pretty smug. Like, I thought, I don't have a problem with aging. But, Ashton, why don't you tell the people who all have problems, right? And I remember asking her, I was like, well, what is some of the ways that you see internalized ageism, like, show up? And so she said, well, the way people use the words young and old. And I said, well, I mean, young is young and old is old. I don't understand. Like, what's the problem? And she said, well, one of the things I hear people say all the time is, I don't feel old. And I said, Well, I do. I say that all the time. I don't feel old. And she goes, well, Karen, I don't know about you. She goes, I suspect when you say I don't feel old, you mean I don't feel irrelevant or I don't feel unsexy. And I don't know about you, but I felt irrelevant and unsexy sometimes when I was 13. Those are not age-related terms, right? And it was just like suddenly I was like, oh, like we use old for a shorthand for bad and young as shorthand for good, and we don't even know we're doing it, right? Yeah. And sort of like, again, Neo, right, take the pill. Like it's when you start to see that kind of idea of I'm too old to start, or is it too old for me? Like, what does that mean? One of the things that I think about in politics, right, because age of the politicians right now is really out there, and people are like, well, if they're too old, then they can't be relevant. But in the same breath, we talk about Bernie Sanders having this very young following, right? Like, it's not about their ages. It's about, one, are they impaired? Or two, are they keeping up with what the issues are for all generations, right? And so really sort of thinking and unpacking how we use those words for other people and for ourselves. And just like racism, just like any other ism, calling it out when we see it, right? And so I'm hoping that when you leave here and people are like, oh my God, you look so good for your age, right? That you're like, I hope I just look good, right? Yeah. Or if somebody says like, I really feel like my time has passed, or we talked about this about relevance, right? Like, nobody has ever had the experience that you have had in this room. That makes you relevant. Right? Because you've got something to share that nobody else knows anything about. So bingo, you're relevant.
Well,
right?
It's like, I like to think like I have something to share because I saw Pavement at Maxwell's in 1991. Like, I like to think that I have something to share because of all the decades I lived through that these little shits didn't live through. You know? I just mentioned I had a birthday, but I had this realization, and it was like taking the blue pill where it was like, okay, I've been trying to be like a young middle-aged person for a while now, and it's straining and straining, and it feels less and less right. And then I had my birthday, and I was like, I'm a young old person. Like, I'm really fucking young now. I'm a spring chicken.
Let's take a quick break from some ads.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Support for Everything is Fine comes from Ritual. So I love Ritual. Everyone knows I love Ritual. I talk about Ritual all the time. I particularly love their daily multivitamin, and I also really have been enjoying their melatonin. But the thing I love most about Ritual is their Hyacera. It's a once daily skin supplement that's clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. In a clinical study, Hyacera led to 3.6 times reduction in crow's feet wrinkles within 90 days as compared to a placebo. Hyacera led to 2.9 times increase in skin smoothness within 90 days as compared to a placebo. You can enhance your skincare routine from the inside out with one daily capsule essenced with soothing vanilla. I love Hyacera. It's been rigorously tested and validated. It's one of the industry-leading sustainability. It meets all of the industry-leading sustainability standards. You know I'm a beauty editor now. I am all about keeping my face plump and highest. Sarah absolutely has done that for me. I've been on it for months. I don't even know how long. And I can really see a difference in the texture of my skin. My skin looks more juicy, I guess, is the best way to do it. Say it, do it. Okay, so you can start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/fine. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription to get today. That's ritual.com/fine for 25% off.
And we're back. But I think that the other thing is like the what's sparking for me right now is like the old ideas is what we need to shake. It's this, well, you know, that I can't do that, or I can't learn that, or this will take too much. I don't have that much time left. Going back in and having like a youthful enthusiasm for things, reconnecting with like a real passion for things, like the things that were exciting about your career that made you feel good, that like the beginner's mind, wanting to learn things, having humility, all of those things. I am so excited about when I can master something even stupid, like making this slide. Like, it is a great joy for me that I taught myself Canva. Like, you know, these are the small things, but it's like, just keep, we know that like one of the keys to aging well is curiosity and staying curious and like challenging your own self-beliefs. A lot of times we just are getting in our own way with our careers, you know, especially at this age, because we've seen everything, we know everything. And I think like sort of busting that up is really, really useful in finding like new things that bring you joy.
But I have a question for you, because yes, you are very good at beginner's mind. You did the internship at the radio station. You taught yourself kind of Canva. You've taught yourself all sorts of, you got yourself in a position where you could get a digital job in 2024 as someone over 50.
I did get a job. It did take a lot of interviews, but I did get a job.
But what would you say to somebody for whom that stuff just doesn't come, not even doesn't come easy, but is a real struggle, feels really fundamentally difficult?
I mean, it's a struggle for me. It's not a struggle for me, but I just Google. Like, I just like watch a lot of YouTube videos. Like, it's not that hard. Like, it's like I feel like I could like fix a cabinet if I had to, because the internet is like giving me, like, I could change my carburetor if that still exists in a car. I don't know. Like, because the internet, like, any of us can do it if we have good reading glasses. Like, I feel like it's like, you know?
And so one of the things that I think that you're sort of touching on is, everybody here in this room has achieved a certain amount of success because of our scrappiness and the way that we figured out problems in the past and the way that we've Googled and everything and else, right?
Business, raising families, right? Whatever it is.
Into this room successful because everything in the past. What makes you think that can't keep to continue? Because now, by the way, not only do you have that scrappiness, you have all this experience and all this proof and this body of evidence of your ability to do hard things. So why you won't stop?
Yeah.
Right? Like, why would you stop for that? And like, your point is like, and back when we did that, Google may not have existed, right?
Exactly.
And we still
I'm like,
didn't.
This is easier right? than it was before. Like, right? That's...
So we got so many tools that can also help us do everything. So, there may be a lot of things to stop you from doing whatever your next big idea is, but don't let age be it. Like,
yeah,
that,
exactly.
That for sure ain't.
I want to open up to questions if anybody has any questions. I always feel like that's fun. If nobody has questions, okay. Oh, you do have a question. Okay. Do I need to bring a mic over there? Should
I? We can repeat.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I am a photographer.
Yes.
And I'm not even going to say that. Whatever. I'm my age. I am. So recently, I was like, you know what? I do not know what the extra strategy looks like for my career. I love weddings. It's my love. I know I'm a crazy person, but I freaking love it.
Yeah.
But I'm also, you know, staring down the barrel of how much longer is this possible, just not simply for my career, but also just for my person.
Yeah.
And so I started looking for a mentor a while back, and and I was like, okay, I want a woman because I need a guy. Like, yeah. Here's how you, you know, go through this kind of thing. And not that I'm, the thing is I don't want to, I'm not ready to end it at all. But I also am, like, aware that it's different now than it was when I was in my 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
And so I started looking and discovered, oh, shit, I'm an OG. Like, there's no one that can take me through this path.
Mm.
So I guess my question is really, like, where does that leave you when you are, you know, looking at a career that, you know, has the physicality to it that maybe you might not be able to do in 10 years? Also, you know, there's a whole thing of, and I had heard this, you know, years ago when I was younger. I'm trying to argue.
No, you're doing good.
Yeah, you're doing great. We see you. We see you changing that language.
And they, you know, all these people that have been in the industry longer than I had said, you know, oh, my, you know, I always age, but my client never does. That was such a, like, at the time, I just was like, oh, you know, whatever. And now I'm like, oh, yeah, that's real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how... So anyway, that's the question.
So your question is, how do you write it out for them, and how do you find people to advise you? Okay, so I would say two things. What do you still, like, for me, it's always like, I am motivated by dreaming, and I am motivated by goal setting, and, like, sort of letting myself think, like, what is the fantasy of what I get to do before I die? Like, I have things that I absolutely am like, oh, God, I'll be upset if I didn't do this before I die. For me, I want to write a novel. I have not done that yet. It's a thing I want to do. And there's other more practical things. But I have things I really want to do that are dreamy to me, that, like, make me, like, just light me up to think about doing them, that I want to still hit before I stop working. And I don't know what those are for you, but I think sort of setting some just things that make you excited about your career, and, like, you can hit those milestones and then see where you are then. Then maybe you'll want to hit another milestone. Maybe you won't.
I'd like to riff on that as well, as a photographer, although I was never a wedding photographer like you are. But for me, what I think has been really helpful to sort of build on that is... First of all, I'm a big journaler. I journal all the time. It's not in a Dear Diary way, but in a I'm planning my life out kind of way.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I would maybe invite you to do is think about what is it about photography that really turns you on, right?
Yeah.
Right? Like, is it the weddings, or is it the storytelling, or is it the, right? Like as much as you can, right? Think about all the things that you do. And then also marry the stuff that you maybe love to do. Maybe you love to teach, maybe you love to write, maybe you love to do all these things. And see if there's an evolutionary path. Like,
yes.
For me, I know I'm never going to stop shooting. Like, that's just never going to happen. It is part of, like, what gives me joy. For me, by the way, I don't know how you wedding photographers do it. That is some high stress stuff that you're doing there. I could, right? Well, but the other thing is, like, maybe it's that you mentor people who become photographers. Maybe it's that you write a book for brides on how to look good in your... Like, there could be all these different avenues, and I'm just riffing up here without knowing anything about your work, but sort of riffing off of what are the things about... Is it the joy of being at a wedding? Is it the fast-pacedness? Is it the... Whatever it is, the fairy tale? Is it the making women feel more beautiful than they've ever felt in their lives because it's a special... Like, think about all those things and go, well, where are ways that I could do that going forward? And then, remember I said, real G's move in silence. Like, just start playing with them. You don't have to tell people you're doing it, right? Just start playing with some of those ideas and see where they take you.
And the forensics of it. It's the forensics of your career. So why am I doing this? What do I still like about it? What would make me like it better? Like, really having that sort of the challenge yourself. Go ahead. Yes.
So I'm just curious to know that since you two are writers, what was your motivation to write about what you're writing about? And how did you start? Like, how did you actually say, I'm going to write a book or I'm going to do a blog, and then... that subject matter?
I think I, at the very beginning, I was just looking, I'd see a TV commercial that I thought was the most unfeminist thing in the world, and I'd be like, oh, bloopity boopity boop. Like, I always, when I was working in magazines, there were so many story ideas that I thought were good for five sentences, and blogging is perfect for that. And so I really, it was sort of what was on my mind, what I was seeing, and what I thought would be of interest to my readers.
Was it kind of your therapy after losing the job? Did you go immediately into that?
No, my therapy was therapy.
Yeah. I will tell you, I became a writer sort of a very weird way. I was working still at Halliburton, the company that shall not be named. And I was traveling. I had just got transferred to London. I was going to be working in our London office, and I decided to start sending out. Remember, this is before Facebook, right? So I decided I'm going to send out emails to my friends, just sort of keeping them apprised of what life is like living in London. And I was at the time the lawyer for the Europe, Africa, and the Middle East. So I was traveling a lot to Nigeria and Dubai and. And I would write about what I saw, and you know, I'd try to be funny. And what happened was, I would get responses back from people I didn't know, and say, "Can you add me to your list?" Because, right? And remember, engineer, lawyer. I had no idea if I had any talent in writing at all. And so I started doing that. And then when my husband and I decided to adopt, that was around the time that web blogging came up. And I thought, oh, well, this is an easy way that I can just sort of keep that up. And our families, I'm from the Caribbean, my husband's from England, right? We could, you see what my souvenir was when I moved to London, right? So my husband's English. And so that was a way to sort of keep us, you know, and I would just write, and then publishers showed up. So it really was sort of a very organic thing, but it was, again, that forensic, I like doing this, so I'm just going to keep looking at these different media.
And just to say, this book that I wrote, Ambition Monster, which is about the connection between trauma and ambition. And I had written a book before that. It was a how-to guide for weird people in the workplace. It was called Weird in the World. It's not whatever. And nobody wanted me to write a second book. The first book proposal went out to 50 people. My agent dumped me. He said, you know, nobody's going to want you to write a second book. This isn't, I just don't see it happening. And I found an agent who said yes. I revised that book proposal 27 times. We went back and forth and back and forth. We went out again. One editor bought it, and that was all I needed. Yeah. And, like, that's it, you know. And I knew I had to write this book. Like, I felt it, you know. So that happens. Yes, hi. Yes, you in the back. You're welcome. Yeah, you right there.
I'll stand
up. Thank you.
I'm an executive at a CPG company. I also have had my own business for 15 years, influencer. I've done many hats, many reinventions, but I don't, being a single mother and I'm in the position I'm in, I don't have maybe the privilege to be able to just go dive into my own business again.
Yeah.
So that said, for those of us who are still on an executive track and might still have a long career ahead, I don't know what's going to happen, none of us do. What advice would you give to women like me who are still in that corporate workplace to address ageism, to address some things, especially being in marketing? I feel like it's like that's just its own thing.
Yeah.
In corporate world. You know, if you have one or two things that you would advise someone like me that wants to maintain a longevity in her career, and has to fight those narratives and stigmas.
We've been talking a lot. I have a day job, by the way, that I do for money, because creative work is not always lucrative. Like, and it's really hard to pay your own health insurance and everything else. Like, I'm still at a corporate job, which was shocking to me, I'll be honest. But there is something that, like, not showing up the way you used to show up, which is like, I'll do anything for you, you know? I will make myself indispensable. Like, I feel like my relationship with my job, unless it is my art, my relationship with my job for money is very different than it was when I was in my 20s and 30s. And one of the things is I do enough. I bring, as we often discuss, I bring my B game.
it's a B plus. It's fine. But I'm not in there looking for the pat on the head every day. I'm not in there looking for the validation from them, because that my day job is fine and I do it well, but it is not the source of pleasure. It is not, you know, it's just work. So separating that out a little bit has been really helpful for me. And I don't know if that will be helpful for you, but I understand the need to make money. Like, it's not to just be like, hey, I just want to work on my decoupage. Like, that would be fucking great. But it's not the reality for most of us, you know?
Yeah. I would say also one of the gifts of getting older, especially if you're getting older in an organization that you've been there, that you have some longevity in, is that the opportunity to step into the role of elder, right? And the opportunity to step into the role of mentor, right? I think is a really powerful thing. And I think it's something that you can claim, right? Like, you don't have to wait for people to look at you as the elder, but you can sort of give yourself the opportunities to not let them think, oh, she's aging out, but you create and curate the story that I am the holder of the wisdom in this role, and I can help people access that wisdom and really look for opportunities to do that, I think is a way that can really play to the meaning and purpose of the work that you do, separate from the actual drudgery of the work that you might do, right? And it's something that can... that if you step into sort of that role and say, this is how I'm going to move in this role as somebody who is not to be trifled with, because I know, right, what this role entails. I know what this business is about. And I'm also very generous about that knowledge to the people who are coming up. I think that can be a very, very powerful way to lead.
So I would just say that when I was at Lucky towards the end, I had completely lost touch with the things that lit me up.
Yeah.
Not just about the job, but personally, the things that I was excited about, the movies I wanted to see, the people I wanted to talk to. And I think that a corporate job can really drain it out of you. And it's just important to stay in touch with the things, both work and extracurricular, that keep you going.
Yeah, for sure.
Who else?
There's somebody who's like, go.
You call. Hi, yeah, right here. Hi. Hi.
I'm just wondering if any of you have felt the just anger and anxiety of being a person who, like, I was lucky enough to be able to stay home with my kids for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And while I did that, I kept up with all of my skills.
Yeah.
In fact, I made them better.
Yeah.
And when I was ready to go back into the workforce, I was literally at the top. Like, I was smarter, I was more, you know, my skills were at their peak, and just because of my age, and because I chose to take a step back and prioritize my kids, literally nobody wanted me. I sent out hundreds of resumes with, you know, portfolio, everything, crickets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so at that point, you're forced to do it.
Yeah.
You don't have a choice.
Yeah.
It's pissed me off.
Yeah.
Why doesn't anybody want me? I am the best that I have ever been.
Yeah. Did you guys hear her over there? Yeah.
And you took me when I was fresh out of college that didn't know how to write my own ass. You know why?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah. And younger, I mean, ageism is real. Like, let's not pretend.
That's peace-offable. Yes.
It's very real, and the truth is younger people are cheaper to employ. There are all sorts of reasons why it happens. And
younger people who are your managers don't want to be managing what they think of as their mom. That's a big fucking thing that's starting to happen now. I've started noticing, like, oh. Yeah, and we know, and it makes them uncomfortable. But I will say that, and I will also say, I had a similar experience when I went, tried to get in job, and I was like, are you fucking, no one's gonna hire me? Are you kidding me? And then, like, I just needed one yes.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of it is a persistence game, and it sucks, and it's real, and I'm not saying it's not hard, but eventually, everybody we talk to on the podcast, everyone I talk to, eventually you'll get a yes. It is just
it's annoying as fuck, but you will get a yes. You just have to keep going.
I want to reframe something, yeah. Just because I think it was really interesting. When I was interviewing people for my book, I interviewed a woman who was in, she was in a very, I don't want to give away anything because I did not put this story in the book, so I don't want to give away who it was. But she was in this very powerful position, and she was doing great and doing wonderfully, and then she was asked to leave, and she was replaced by somebody who was younger, much prettier, much less experienced, right? And she was obviously quite hurt by this. And she was talking to her husband about it, and he said, you know, how much of your leaving really had to do with the fact that they thought you were too old for the job, and instead were like, you've become too powerful for this job.
Yes.
And we actually want somebody younger that we can control and manipulate, right? And she said it totally reframed everything, right, for her. So I just offer that. I mean, I don't know that it necessarily solves the pissed offness, but it was sort of a really interesting to reframe to suddenly go, oh, wait, this isn't about my aging. It's about your fear.
Yes.
Right, of the power that I've amassed. And that to me was a really, really powerful reframe.
Go ahead.
Do you have a way to shut down people who present that fear to you? Like, I mean, there's plenty of, like, your publisher, I'm just running into a lot of people, even other women who bring up my age. I'm like, oh, you're starting over at your age.
Yeah.
I just would really like some ammunition to, like, walk and be able to, because it's 27 times of getting up and trying again.
Yeah, it's hard.
I need to find, you know?
Yeah. I think you really have to have, like, a very powerful, I'll show you. You know, you really just have to have that. And that's what I'm talking about. We had that when we were younger. We had that, you know, that fire and that. That's what you kind of, I think, need to reignite. And also, you can also not work that hard right now if you don't feel like it. Like this, we don't have to be super ambitious at this. You know, we can also not.
Yeah.
But if you still have, like, a thing you really want to do, then it's worth putting the same kind of effort into it that you did when you were young, regardless of how you think the world's seeing you.
Yeah. And I would also say that if somebody says to you, well, you're going to start over that right now, and again, this is the blue pill thing, right? Help reframe it to be like, yes, isn't the world lucky that I have all this experience behind me to be able to do this, right? Like, aren't I giving you something? Like, I'm doing something new here, and I've got this whole, like, decades of perspective that I'm going to add to this job that nobody else has ever been able to do,
yeah.
And younger people can't do.
Yeah.
They just don't have it, and that is a gift. And sort of really, I mean, challenging, like, not even the people who are interviewing you, but the friends, the parents who are like, oh, I'm just looking out for you, right?
Oh.
Like, really help them to sort of see, like, do you realize how fucked up that is that you're saying this to me, right? And you're looking at it from the wrong perspective.
Yeah.
How are we on time, guys?
We'll probably have to go, but we'll ask two more questions. Go ahead, you and then you. Go ahead, you go first.
No, I'm not starting over. I've had the same job and career the whole time. I'm an interior designer, but for various personal reasons, everyone has the same kind of thing probably. I had to stifle my ambition during my 30s and, you know, put other people's first. And anyway, I've come back around, and it's my time, and I've pushed myself to the front in the last couple of years, and it's going great.
Nice.
And I am, like, really making some strides in the last couple of years. I'm going to be 44 this May. And I'm feeling really good, and now I am just sort of struggling with feelings of like, if I had only been able to put myself first 10 years ago, imagine where I'd be now.
Yeah, but, you know, the woulda, coulda, shoulda. You can't do it to yourself.
Don't shoulda all over yourself, hon. Don't ever shoulda all over yourself.
Really, it just, I mean, I made so many massive mistakes throughout my career and my life, and I can drive myself crazy thinking about them. You know, I sold a house in Carroll Gardens in 2001.
Yeah, you gotta let that go.
You just have to let it go.
Yeah.
You just have to let it go. You have to be, like, in the moment. That's it.
Okay.
One more.
Augusta talked this morning, said we need a directory, and I walked in this room, and I was like, these are the woman I want in my directory.
Oh, I love it.
I started a little Google spreadsheet. If you want to come see me and put your name so we can mentor each other.
Love this.
Oh, amazing.
Love it.
Hands and knees. Thank you, ladies, for getting up there and being fabulous as they are, but also simultaneously acknowledging that you're plebeians and idiots in the beginner's mind. Because if we don't do that, we can't explore and expand into our next creation.
Amen.
Yeah. Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Everything is Fine. We're your hosts. I'm Jen Romolini.
And I'm Kim France.
If you like the show, please rate and review it across the platforms, especially Apple Podcasts, and especially subscribing. It really helps people find the show and it makes a difference. If you want to support the production of the show, it is $3 on patreon.com/everythingisfine. It helps us keep the lights on of the show and pay our wonderful editor. If you want to follow us on social media, we're on Instagram at EIF Podcast, and we have a robust and private Facebook group. If you want to follow Kim, she's at kimfrance.substack.com. If you want to follow me, you can see me all over the place. Jen Romolini's Vanity is where I'm recommending beauty products these days. Also, if you want to pre-order my book, Ambition Monster, which comes out in June, that link is in the show notes. Our show is mixed and edited by the wonderful Natalie Rivera. Thank you, Natalie, and we'll be back next week.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.